There's no question about it today. We are being watched and photographed, videoed more than at any other time in the history of the world. It's estimated that 6.1 billion of us around the world have cell phones with a camera. Annually, 106 million new surveillance cameras are sold to the public. There are also more than 3 million ATM machines that stare back at you, clicking your picture as you do your banking business. Along with that are tens of thousands of ANPRs. These are cameras known as automatic number plate recognition devices. They are set up along the highway and take your picture as you drive, trying to catch speeding motorists and suspected criminals. Also in high demand today are personal monitoring systems, things like dash cams, helmet cams, doorbell cameras, and of course the new craze, the drones. Drones flown by both the public and the government. Add all that to about 1,700 satellites that orbit the Earth, some around 300 miles away, and can take detailed pictures of where you live. No question, all of these new technologies are helpful to people like investigators and the police and detectives and crime fighters in using these cameras to identify suspects and where they are. But even in the midst of this constant surveillance, it all pales in comparison to the ever watchful present eye of God upon your life. David, the one-time king of Israel, the person called the man after God's own heart, made this claim in Psalm 139, verse 7. Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? He had earlier said in verse 5 of Psalm 139 that God would hedge us in, that God would go before us, and that he would come after us. And he literally surrounds us where we are at all times. The presence of God walks with us, and he does it for the purpose of maintaining his hand upon our lives in a constant way. You know, think about this for a minute. The creator of the universe constantly has his eye upon you. The creator of all things encapsulates you wherever you go with every step. He knows the words you speak before they come out of your mouth, the thoughts you have before you think them. The creator God walks with you that his hand of blessing may stay upon your life. That's a pretty overwhelming thing. And we ourselves ought to be allowing these realities to come deeply into our minds. And the reason that we ought to think about such things, think about the love of God, think about the sacrifices of God, think about his loving kindness of encapsulating you directing your steps. When David thought about all of these things and that he was so important to the Creator God, that God would do these things for him, David said, "It blew my mind." He couldn't imagine such a thing. He couldn't make his thoughts come together. He couldn't envision the Creator giving his attention to a speck on the planet, one he died for, David. So let me ask you again, do you know how much God loves you? Have you spent time, and do you spend time contemplating the depth of how he feels about you? You think about the love, the grace he's given, the forgiveness he's offered, the limitless reaches he has gone and will go and continues to this day to lead you, to cover you, to protect you, and to bless you. In this new series, The Me I've Always Wanted to Be, the first and best thing that we can do in becoming that me in Christ that I've always wanted to be is to purposefully and continually dwell, present tense, dwell in his love under his covering. David finally got his thoughts together after the initial shock of realizing the depth of God's love and his presence around him. And with these thoughts, he begins to make these truths clear and evident. Follow me in chapter 139 of Psalm, verses 13 through 18. You made all the delicate inner parts of my body and knit me together in my mother's womb. Thank you for making me so wonderfully complex. Your workmanship is marvelous. How well I know it. You watched me as I was being formed in utter seclusion, as I was woven together in the dark of the womb. You saw me before I was born. And every day of my life was recorded in your book, every moment laid out before a single day had passed. How precious are your thoughts about me, O God. They cannot be numbered. I can't even count them. They outnumber the grains of sand. And when I wake up, you are still with me. In these passages, David talks about the supreme God's involvement in his birth. Now, I want you all to listen very carefully this morning because David gives great detail. He is very precise about the covering and the ministry and the creation of God in your life. David speaks of God forming his inner being. He speaks of God covering him in his mother's womb, of God seeing him in the whole mystery of creation and skillfully knitting David together in the lowest parts of the earth. The wording that David uses here tells us, it confirms to us that God gives great attention at birth or at conception. That God was and still is, of course, involved in your life, but at the point of your embryonic state, in this your literal beginning of time, he was there. And the words that he uses tells us that he possessed us at that time, that he owned us, that literally he held us. He called us his own. In that very earliest moment, he called us his own. The imagery that he creates is pretty phenomenal. David says that God saw him as an unwound ball of cords, strands, and strings. All those terms fit that Hebrew word. That when God saw him, he was this bound, unwound ball of strings, and that God in creation unwound that ball and began to knit us, stitch us together to be the people that we are. What I'm about to say, I want to make it very clear that this is speculation. I've neither heard of this before, nor have I read it anywhere before. But as I was thinking through this wording and this imagery that David presents to us, I couldn't help but think of this ball of cords and strings being unwound and God knitting it together and seeing that as DNA. Let me show you what I mean. One scientist that was a part of an immense project involving 440 scientists from 32 laboratories around the world, and their task was to continue unraveling the mysteries of DNA. This scientist, when asked what it looked like, he said this. He said, "It's like opening a wiring closet and seeing a hairball of wires, only this hairball of wires is actually about 10 feet of DNA stuffed into a microscopic nucleus of a cell." So you get one cell, and you open that cell up, and you see its DNA. He says it looks like a hairball of wires. Well, isn't that what David is describing? A ball of string and strands, yet unwound? And in creation, it's described in detail. In creation, God saw us at that point and began to unravel this ball of DNA and began to stitch us together at that point. Finally, science is coming clearer to, or religion is becoming clearer to science, right? Took me by surprise when I began to think in these terms, because again, I've never thought of this or read it any place before, but it certainly, to me anyway, makes sense that this happened. Here's what God did. He took this ball of string, unbound. He did this. He knit us together and made us. That's a terrible picture, isn't it? But that seems to be the sequence. And that seems to be the thought process that David is giving, that he took this unbound ball of string and he began to stretch it out and knit it together. He is Creator God. David goes on to tell us in verse 13 of Psalm 139 that you and I are fearfully and wonderfully made. But some of you want to raise your hand and say, well, what about me? What happened to me? If all of this creative activity of God is so wonderful, and I believe in God, and I believe that He was there at the point of conception, and that He unbound me to create me just as I am, I believe all that. But then why did He have to give me the ears that He did? Why am I not as tall as everyone else? Why am I not more talented and gifted? Why can't I find my reason for being here? Why can't I find my purpose? If God created me so definitively and purposefully, why am I so unhappy? Why am I like I am? Why didn't God give me more? Just a very few years ago, scientists who study the human genome claimed that there were about 4.1 million bits of DNA that were useless. In fact, they labeled them junk DNA and determined that only a small portion of the DNA that's in that cell is actually working and helping. But the latest studies call those pieces of junk DNA hidden treasures, because they've found that they play a critical role in controlling things like cells, organs, and tissue within the body. What science called DNA, or junk DNA, they're now calling hidden treasure. You may look at yourself in the mirror, or you may evaluate yourself in terms of competing or contrasting yourself with a friend or a relative, or trying to live up to someone else's standards and expectations, and you may just be crestfallen about how you look, your shape, what you've achieved, haven't achieved, your number of failures, and look in the mirror and see junk DNA. But staring over your shoulder is Creator God, who is whispering hidden treasure in you. When I was a kid, we would play golf sometimes. One of my parents would drop me off and meet a couple of buddies out at the golf course, and we'd play for a while, and then we'd start goofing around and try to find golf balls and kill snakes and things. But I never understood the golf ball. I mean, it's not smooth like a football. It's not sleek like a baseball. It's got all of these dimples and little dig-out parts to the ball. is covered in these little dimples. And I always wonder, why can I find a round golf ball? Because I'll bet I could bust that thing. But this thing with dimples. Well, an aeronautical engineer who designs golf balls made this statement. A perfectly smooth golf ball would only travel about 130 yards off the tee. You could only hit it about 130 yards. But the same ball with the right kind of dimples in it will fly twice that far. The dimples are extremely important in the flight of the ball. God uses our perceived flaws and weaknesses for our good and His glory. He created us in His image. He meticulously laid out the plan for our life. He constantly surrounds us. He uses those things about ourselves that we wish were different for good and to be who He's called us to be. Let me close with this. It's an internet story that made its way through the internet. True or not, I couldn't tell you. But it's a story of a young lady, a 34-year-old lady named Susan, who lost her sight and became totally blind. She, of course, didn't understand this, fell into a deep depression. She had one time been very independent, but now she was non-functional. Her husband, Mark, loved her deeply and wanted to help. He suffered along with her. He worked to help her develop the skills that she would need to be able to go back to work. So finally, after many weeks, Susan decided to return to work. So every day, her husband, Mark, an Air Force officer, would drive his wife to work, walk her into the office, make sure she got settled, leave then to go to his base, his job across town, and then come back and pick her up at the end of the day. This went on for several weeks, but because of distance and time and cost, they knew it couldn't go on that way. So Mark told Susan that she would need to learn to ride the bus to work. Susan was beside herself. I'm blind. How am I going to know how many stairs there are? How am I going to know what path to take? I feel like you're abandoning me. But just as he promised from the very beginning, Mark said he would do whatever it took to help her and to make sure that she felt confident in her riding the bus. He helped her with the routes, the stairs, the paths, and then finally the day came. After many weeks, Susan decided to go on her own. One Monday morning, she got up and she traced the route that she had practiced, and she got on the bus and it made her way to work. She did this Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then the last day, Friday of the work week. The driver of the bus, as she got onto the bus, said, "Ma'am, I really envy you." And she said, "Are you talking to me? What do you mean you envy me?" And the driver said, "Well, every morning for this past week, a fine-looking gentleman in a military uniform has been standing across the corner watching you when you get on and off the bus. He makes sure that you cross the street safely, and he watches you until you enter your office building. He never takes his eyes off of you. And then he blows you a kiss, gives you a little salute, and walks away." And he said, "You're one lucky lady." That may describe your path, where an incident has fallen into your life like her blindness that has just knocked you down. But it's through these trials, the presence of God walks with us and prepares our way. And it's through these things we don't like about ourselves, whether it be physical or some other attribute. Let God use you. He created you as you are. No junk DNA. Let Him fill you with His Spirit, knowing that every step you take, the presence of the Lord surrounds you. And you can pray that same blessing upon your children and upon our children's children, that they walk encased by the God who created them, a God who spelled out a life plan for them.